that's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
Welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you this evening. And Maria Kina was so close. I don't know if you can hear her laugh. So close to working in, trying to get a quote from me to make me stand here and listen to her. But she didn't have the time. So we're all blessed by that. Hey, welcome back to At Your Service. Brad Young in with you tonight. Just until 10 o'clock this evening. And we're talking all things election, all things Halloween, all things Amendment 3. What is on your mind? I've spent most of the break responding to texts, so thank you very much. I try to respond to every text, 314-436-7900. So thanks for being a part of the show. One of the things that I love to point out, this is a short segment, but I've got time for this. I grew up watching James Bond movies, okay? You may have too. I love them. Are they realistic? Of course not. There's not anything realistic about a James Bond movie. But aren't they fun? I mean, they're just fun. And I've loved them all. I've seen every James Bond movie multiple times. Of course, Sean Connery's the best. I don't think that's even any debate. But Daniel Craig is a very, very close second. And I'm looking forward to seeing who they get for the next James Bond. But by having this allure of James Bond movies, I think as a kid, I grew up thinking that criminals were like James Bond villains, that they were billionaire, genius, Mensa-level masterminds who were planning to take over the world. And the reality is, most criminals are morons, okay? They're not James Bond villains. They don't have their own spaceship facility in space. They don't have their own piranha tank where they throw in the bad guys. They don't have lasers that carve up gold while James Bond is on the table. None of that's real, okay? Most criminals are idiots, and that's why they're criminals, right? So I always love when I see stories in the news about moron criminals. And this really takes the cake. So this is a Baldwin case right here in St. Louis County. And this May, and this guy, by the way, the defendant, Ryan Martin, went to jail just this week on these crimes. He was convicted. But here's what's interesting about this. He was charged with stealing a lot. He was stealing cars, but more importantly, he was stealing almost $300,000 worth of copper wire from an Ameren substation near Mercy Hospital. So a lot of copper things get stolen because copper is very valuable. And so he was trying to steal this $300,000 worth of copper, and he stole a car in order to go and steal the copper. So he thought this through. But there was one, he made one colossal mistake, one enormous mistake. He apparently forgot that he was wearing an ankle monitor from his prior crimes. So by wearing an ankle monitor, the guy is literally going to a crime scene while alerting the police exactly where he is. And the cops notice that he was not where he was supposed to be. His GPS ankle monitor, which cannot be removed, started going off, and then there was a crime committed in the area. I wonder who could be doing this, since we've got a career criminal wearing an ankle monitor who's 5 feet away from the scene of the crime. I wonder who's doing it. Maybe, just maybe, it's Ryan Martin, the guy whose ankle monitor showed he was exactly where the crime was being committed. So I point those things out because, like I said, criminals are not James Bond villains. Because if you're a James Bond villain, okay, you would have either, number one, invented some fantastical way of spoofing the ankle monitor before you went and committed this crime. You would have done that, right? Or you would have figured out how to put it on your dog or let the dog run around. And you can say, well, see, I wasn't there. I was out next to a tree in the woods or something. You know, you'd have some other way of using it as an alibi. And in fact, that was attempted. It was in 2022. And it was in, of course, it was in Arkansas. And I love this story. In 2022, a guy, the cops showed up at a guy's house. Somebody called 911. The cops show up. This guy is loosely tied to a kitchen chair. And when I say loosely, it was very, very loosely tied. And he said, a bad guy just came in. He kidnapped my wife. I don't know where she is. Oh, my goodness. I'm afraid for the life of my wife. Please untie me. Right. So the cops untie him. And after about 5 minutes of a search, they find the gentleman's wife deceased in a creek bed not too far from their house. And when the police started investigating, though, a red flag came up. That red flag was he wasn't even really tied to the chair. I mean, he could have just got up and the ropes fell and he could have flee. Why did he stay tied up to the chair? Then the cops who noticed that also noticed that this particular criminal was wearing a Fitbit. That's right. He was wearing a Fitbit. And what does a Fitbit do? Fitbit tracks your steps, right? So the police got a warrant, got access to his Fitbit account, and guess what? Shazam! The Fitbit showed that all of a sudden he was enormously exerting himself while walking towards the dried creek bed behind his house. And then after he apparently dropped the body, his heart rate and everything started to calm down because he dropped the extra weight in the creek bed. And then it went right back to where he tied himself up in the chair. So listen, if you've got this design on your life to be a master criminal, two very simple points of advice. Don't wear an ankle monitor and don't wear a Fitbit. Hey, we're going to come back from the break. And I want to talk about the media, in particular, the Washington Post's decision to not endorse Kamala Harris and the outrage that's coming from their decision to not endorse a political candidate. At your service, Brad Young, stick around. We'll be right back. Good call there, Kyle Sixta. Yeah, I think that's the theme song from The Exorcist, I think. And we talked about Halloween movies a couple of weeks ago, but that, to me, scariest movie of all time. No question. No question about it. And as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, the book upon which The Exorcist was... Did you look that up, Kyle? I don't know if you look... Kyle's shaking his head. You looked that up?
I did, yeah. That's interesting.
Isn't it?
It is.
Because it supposedly took place right on right downtown. I believe it was on... It was on Forest Park Boulevard,
mm-hmm.
and the house where this happened. So, Lindell or Forest Park Boulevard, one of those two. But yeah, supposedly took place right here in St. Louis, which makes it even scarier. Before I get to the story about the Washington Post, I wanted to get to this story because you heard it at the top of the hour, and that is the story about whether President Biden called Trump supporters garbage. Now, from a political standpoint, what a stupid move by the president to make, because I think the Republicans were getting hit hard on the comic who made racist comments at that Trump rally. And he was calling the country of Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage. And there was a lot of Puerto Rican and Latino pushback against that. And that's an area where Republicans have truly been making inroads. So that was a colossal mistake. But instead of letting that play out and be the story for several days, Biden goes and makes another gaffe. And it was, by the way, President Obama who called Joe Biden a gaffe machine. That was, I think, his term for President Biden. But then the story and the narrative changed. It changed from what the comments, the awful, reprehensible comments from the comedian, to what President Biden said. And here's the reason why I bring up the story. And I'm going to let you be the judge here in just a moment. But here's what's happened today. The House Republican Conference Chair, Elise Stefanik, and James Comer accused the White House and actually sent a letter to the White House counsel today accusing the White House of publishing a false transcript of President Biden's controversial remarks yesterday. And they also warned the White House that that could violate federal law. It's a possible violation of federal law if you doctor the official transcripts of what the president says. And they're essentially accusing the White House of doing just that. Now, let me set the stage, and then I want you to listen to the clip. But here's what happened. President Biden was doing an interview, and he is supposedly saying on this audio clip that the people who support Donald Trump, they're garbage. And in fact, I think the exact quote is President Biden. No, yeah, that's essentially what he said, that people who support President Trump, former President Trump, are garbage. Now, the White House then released a revised transcript implying that he was calling the comedian garbage, not that he was calling Trump supporters, plural, garbage. But I want you to hear it and hear what or see what you think the president said when he gave this quote.
And just the other day, a speaker at his rally called Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage. Well, let me tell you something. I don't know the Puerto Rican that I know, or Puerto Rico where I'm in my home state of Delaware. They're good, decent, honorable people. The only garbage I see floating out there is his supporters.
Now, you can clearly hear that he says his supporters, and you can clearly hear the S on the back of that. Now, besides the fact that he stumbles and he's trying to say, I know a lot of Puerto Ricans and they're not garbage, but in botching the clip, he says, I don't know any Puerto Ricans. Some are in my home state. I don't really know any, but they're really good people. Put that aside, he specifically states that Trump supporters, plural, are garbage. And so that's just a political statement. To me, it doesn't mean anything. But what does mean something is when the White House changes the transcript and tries to argue that the president didn't say what you just heard him say. And that could be a violation of law. Why isn't the mainstream media covering that? If the president commits a crime, if the White House commits a crime, to me, that should be big news regardless of who does it. Trump made a phone call to a guy in Georgia, and not only was there nonstop media coverage, he was impeached over a phone call, over what he allegedly said. So I don't know why I do know. I'm raising the question to answer it, and that is because of media bias. But it's interesting that if the White House, in this White House, may have committed a federal crime by changing the official transcript of what he said, all we're hearing from the mainstream media are crickets. Barbara's been holding for a while. Hey, Barbara, welcome to KMOX.
Good evening. My comment is about the early voting. I'm a city voter, and
yes.
I was just, tell you what, I was shocked. Voter library yesterday, finally was getting in the room to vote. There had to be at least a dozen people sitting on chairs along the wall with a clipboard and the ballot. And anybody could see how they were voting.
Mm-hmm.
They had a few tables set up with three-sided boards for privacy.
Right.
I just am curious if other libraries and voters experience the same thing. I was fortunate enough to say I went to vote in private, and she found me a chair with a three-sided protection in private.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. Isn't your vote supposed to be private?
It is supposed to be private. And first of all, I applaud you for voting. But a couple of things come to mind, Barbara, and I want to ask you about this. And that is, first of all, I've never heard of that where you could just literally watch someone else voting right next to you. But I'm going to look into that and see what are the actual rules when it comes to your privacy in terms of how you cast your ballot. That's important. I mean, secret ballot is very, very important. And I know that they're not supposed to let you take pictures. And that's a legal issue now, because if you are taking a picture of voting, now I'm not going to ask you how you voted, but if you were the type of person that wanted to photograph yourself voting for a particular candidate and then post it on social media, that would be covered under the First Amendment. So would state laws that prevent you from photographing your act of voting be in violation of the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment? What do you think?
I think it could be. But again, there had to be at least 12 chairs, and maybe it was because they were trying to get as many people voting
mm-hmm.
as possible. But you could see there were windows in the room, and if you were in line, you could see the people sitting there. And you know what? That's a long ballot.
Oh, I know. It takes a long time.
The ballot doesn't fit on a clipboard.
Like jumbo hot dogs on little bitty buns. They hang over both sides, right?
Yeah, you're right. But I thought, I just was shocked. I really was. And again, I don't know if all the city libraries were doing that,
mm-hmm.
if it was just to get people, you know, in and out. But
well, this was yesterday.
I'm just shocked.
All right, this was yesterday. So tell us, Barbara, did you have to wait in line? Was it a long line? Tell us about your experience.
It really wasn't bad. It was about maybe 2:10 in the afternoon, and by the time I got into the ballot place, it was at least an hour,
mm-hmm.
and then you vote. I don't think it was bad.
Okay.
I really don't. It was a long line.
And how long did it take you to get through the ballot?
Oh, gosh. Man, I've read everything, so yeah, maybe a good 20 minutes or more,
right.
easily. Some things that, you know, some things I knew right away, but yeah, you want to read it all. But again, that ballot was not going to sit on the clipboard. I don't know.
Well,
I just don't know.
I know, and it raises that age-old question, just like I said, that jumbo hot dogs don't fit on buns. Why is it that hot dogs come in packages of 16, but buns only come in packages of 12? I want to know the answer to that, Barbara. That bugs me every time I go to the store.
I agree. I can't help you there, but I just thought voting was supposed to be private. And
it was. It is.
I'm glad I'm not a speed reader.
Yeah, that's good. Well, Barbara, hey, thanks for calling in this evening. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you for the program.
Oh, you are welcome.
KMOX is the best.
I wholeheartedly agree. Thank you. Hey, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I am going to get to this Washington Post story, because to me, I think it points out hypocrisy beyond belief, and that's what I want to zero in on, what the media is supposed to be and the reality of what so much of the media actually does. Phone lines are open. Text line is open, 314-436-7900. I've got a whole bunch of texts in here. I'm going to get to those during the break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes right here on KMOX. Who you going to call? Well, how about calling us? 314-436-7900. Love to hear from you this evening here on KMOX. I got to tell you, though, since we had the lead in with the great Kyle Sixta bumper music, you know, this whole idea where you're supposed to tell a joke, right? When you go trick-or-treating. Well, I've got one of my best friends from law school. He is easily a progressive, very, very far left. So we have lunch together about once a month, and we just argue politics for the entire hour. We annoy everyone around us. We eat chicken wings at Cyberg's, and then we, you know, we go out and laugh, and we're great friends. So I've always been telling him for years that I always think that Halloween is the perfect Democrat holiday, because people show up at your house, they do absolutely nothing, and then they expect to get paid for it. And I tell him that joke every year. I'm going to have lunch with him on Friday. I tell him that joke every Halloween, and he never laughs. He says, Brad, that's not funny. I still think it's funny, but you know what? I'm going to keep trying. I'll do it again this Friday in the Valley, Chesterfield, Cyberg's, probably at about 12:15. So that will be a fun time. What's not a fun time is for those right now who are screaming and yelling about the Washington Post. Now, one of the things, even as a kid, I never understood when newspapers would endorse candidates. I never understood that, because the media is supposed to be, when you're talking about the reporting of news, what I'm doing here this evening is opinion. Okay, this is not the reporting of news. This is opinion. But it always baffled me, and you've never heard me, rather, let me go back to that. You've never heard me once endorse a candidate, and you never will. You will never hear me endorse a candidate on the air. I just don't do that. I don't think it's right. I talk about ideas, not endorsement of candidates. And yet newspapers routinely endorse candidates. Now, it's never a shock when virtually every newspaper in the country would endorse whatever president is running for office. It's just a knee-jerk reaction. Well, the Washington Post this week did something that has shaken the media world. And that is the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos, infamous, you know, talk about your James Bond villain. He's your James Bond villain. I mean, he's got his own spacecraft company, okay? So he told the Washington Post that they are not allowed to endorse a candidate in this election. And the left went apoplectic at hearing the news that the Washington Post would not endorse Kamala Harris for president. Not only did that happen, but one of the senior editors of the Washington Post resigned in protest, so upset that the Washington Post was not going to actually endorse Harris for president. And 250,000 subscribers to the Washington Post immediately canceled their subscription to the Washington Post strictly, solely, and exclusively because the Post did not endorse Kamala Harris. Now, to me, I think this is funny on multiple levels. First of all, I agree with Jeff Bezos. And listen, there's no question. He's very left. He's expressed those opinions. He's probably going to vote for Kamala Harris. I don't know. It's up to him and in the secrecy of the ballot box whom he votes for. But telling his own newspaper that he owns to be non-biased, and the left is shocked at that. In essence, the left is saying, how dare you be fair and balanced? How dare you be objective? How dare you not be one-sided when it comes to your endorsement of candidates? Now, we all know, I read the Washington Post, we all know if you look at how they report the news, there's no question that the Post is left of center. That's not an issue at all. So really, the only thing they're doing is not coming out and saying, vote for Kamala Harris. Short of that, they're advocating all of her positions. They echo all of her smears of President Trump. And so in all but word and deed, they have already endorsed Kamala Harris. But the sheer fact of them not doing it specifically has outraged the left. Now, the Washington Post isn't alone in this, and I applaud these other publications. The Los Angeles Times has made the same decision not to endorse. USA Today has decided not to endorse. And it's interesting that both NPR, which NPR is, you know, I love watching NPR. I love listening to NPR. But when you listen to it, you know they're just really articulating an agenda. NPR and CNN are trashing this non-endorsement by the Washington Post, by the Los Angeles Times, and by USA Today. Now, what I think is interesting, though, is this, is that in looking for the truth, I mean, to me, that's what media does, right? Report what's happening, look for the truth, the objective truth, not the subjective truth. But in doing that, did those same people who are just outraged at the Post not endorsing Kamala Harris, did they intervene when a Post, as someone at the Washington Post, won a Pulitzer Prize for articles that was suggesting that Trump and the Russians were in cahoots and they were relying on what was called that infamous Steele dossier, which was fabricated propaganda developed by the Hillary Clinton campaign, paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign, and yet that suggestion that there was collusion with the Russians, there was never any truth to that. We had to have an entire investigation by a special counsel to look into that collusion. Special counsel came back, Mueller, there was no connection, right? Did they look into that and publish a retraction? No, they didn't do that. Did Bezos interfere or intervene, or did the Washington Post intervene when they were really using mental gymnastics to try to argue that COVID-19 did not leak from a Chinese lab? And they were quoting fact checkers who were just wrong. And now the consensus pretty much is, I mean, I think even Fauci has admitted that the evidence shows that COVID probably came from a lab leak in Wuhan, China. Did they come and publish a retraction and say we missed it? No, they didn't do that either. Whenever the Hunter Biden story came out, the laptop story about all of the things that were on Hunter Biden's laptop and the people close to Hunter Biden were coming out with letters that were signed by government officials saying this is Russian propaganda. And now when Hunter Biden went to trial, The FBI confirmed that the laptop was legitimate. Did the Washington Post go and publish a retraction and say, oops, we got that wrong? No, they didn't do that. They didn't do that at all. So it's interesting that they're outraged to the point of resigning their employment with the Washington Post when it comes to their non-endorsement of Kamala Harris. But when it comes to getting stories right and getting the truth accurately and reporting things properly, they're apparently not interested in doing those things properly, because none of those things, none of those topics I just mentioned, were ever retracted by the Washington Post. And a friend of the show, Mary Lynn, texted in and calls it the lamestream media, not the mainstream media. And you're exactly right. And Mary Lynn, you also mentioned that it was the Democrats who were colluding with Russia. And that's true. And that's also been proven through the Mueller investigation, that the Steele dossier that was developed as what's called opposition information that was developed in 2016, and they paid the former British agent to get that information. They got it by paying Russians. So in a quixotic twist of fate, when in 2016 there was the allegation that Trump was colluding with the Russians, it was really the Democrats who were paying the Russians for disinformation. And of course, we don't hear that either. But to me, it's just laughable that the Washington Post is more interested in articulating an editorial opinion than they are about getting their facts straight. What do you think? 314-436-7900. I've got some texts I got to respond to here during the break. But when we come back, we've got lots more news of the day, including Robert Downey Jr. issuing a warning to future AI imposters trying to steal his voice and image. We'll cover that next on KMOX. Welcome back to Camo X. I know you are thrilled to be listening to At Your Service tonight. I know you're rolling your eyes. That's, you know, I got three daughters, and they always tell me, Dad, you're not funny. I'm like, I know. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm trying to provoke a response, and you calling me on my unfunniness is exactly what I was going for. I got the response I wanted. So there. Anyway, a couple of things come to mind here, but I want to get to this Robert Downey Jr. story before I finally end the show tonight talking about some of the polling data for the upcoming election. But, you know, AI is everywhere. Right now, NVIDIA, which is one of the companies that creates the computer chips that makes AI possible, right now they are closing in on being the most profitable, most valuable company on the planet. More than Microsoft, more than Apple, more than AT&T. So obviously AI is a big deal. And Robert Downey Jr. was asked about AI imaging of him doing Iron Man. Because talk about a guy who was born to play a character. Robert Downey Jr. was born to play Iron Man, right? I mean, he's just it. He's perfect for that role. And so he was asked about in a podcast, he was asked about whether he was worried about Disney stealing his image. And he said, no. Listen, I know the guys there. There's like three or four people that make those decisions. They know me. They love me. They would never steal my image. So then the interviewer asked Robert Downey Jr., well, yeah, but you're probably going to be dead in the future. And some future executive, after you're long gone, may not honor your wishes. And in response to that, Downey said, well, I may be dead and gone, but my law firm will still be very active. And so he intends to sue or have his estate sue, kind of like Elvis, where they're going to sue anyone who tries to steal his image of Iron Man or his image of other characters. Perhaps even Dr. Doom. We'll see the next Marvel movie comes out in a few years. But what it reminded me of is how much of a legal quandary, legal quicksand AI can be. Now, there was a movie, it was called Rogue One, came out a few years ago. Excellent movie. I loved it. One of the better Star Wars movies ever to come out. And in that movie, the movie came out, I don't know, 5 years ago or so. But what's interesting is that in that movie, the actor Peter Cushing appears in the movie. Peter Cushing died, I believe he died in 1993. And so what Disney did is they recreated with AI, they recreated Peter Cushing's image for the movie. And it looked good. It looked really good. They recreated it. Now, before the movie went into production, Disney went to the estate of Peter Cushing, got their permission, you know, probably gave him a few Benjamins for it. That's fine. But they were all on board. But then a lawsuit was filed last year in England by a gentleman by the name of Kevin Francis. And Kevin Francis said, well, before Peter Cushing died, he and I were best friends. And before he died in 1993, he signed over to me in an agreement that I, granting me, Kevin Francis, the authority to approve any recreation of the actor's image in any future movies, pictures, media, etc. And so he is suing Disney, claiming he's entitled to royalties, he's entitled to damages because they used Peter Cushing's image without his permission. This is going to go to trial in England probably next year. I don't know how what type of precedent that will have in the U.S., but isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that now actors who were acting decades ago never envisioned a scenario where they would not only have to protect their current rights to their image, but they would have to protect their intellectual property rights of their image into perpetuity, forever, into the future. And so it raises the idea that, you know, when I was a kid, my dad loved John Wayne movies. And when I was little, he and I would watch these John Wayne movies and they were great. Well, they were great. You know, when you're 10, they were great. So we would watch these, but there's no reason why you couldn't have a John Wayne movie come out next year. Maybe the John Wayne estate would sue, but certainly there would be no contracts, no documents, no agreements from the 1970s or early 1980s where John Wayne would have had some sort of imaging protection into perpetuity. Wouldn't exist. They never envisioned it. So doesn't it create this legal dilemma that we have where we could possibly see characters from the past, character actors, we could see Humphrey Bogart, we could see Lauren Bacall, we could see anyone who's passed away, Marilyn Monroe, she could do a new movie. It wouldn't be difficult. But how do we handle that legally? How do we handle that from an image protection standpoint? That's what all this litigation now is going to be focusing on as we move deeper into the 21st century and as AI becomes a greater part of the seams of our lives, whether it's movies, TV, whatever there might be, we're going to see the legal implications are going to become profound as time moves forward. Hey, speaking of time, I want to leave a little bit of time for just a bit of political analysis here before we end the show. In looking at the polling data, and I mentioned this, my goodness, 2 hours ago when I was on with Matt Pauly for a few minutes, I don't look at any one poll because all polls have some degree of bias in them, some degree of error. So what I look at are, it's called the 538 model. Real Clear Politics also does it, where they take a poll of the most accurate polls. And that weeds out some of the inherent bias that comes from any particular poll in of itself in a vacuum. So looking at that, and right now I'm looking at the Real Clear Politics average for the 7 battleground states, and Trump is ahead in 5 of them, and Harris is ahead in 2 of them. And earlier today, Harris was only ahead in 1 of them. So we see movement in Wisconsin and Michigan away from Trump and towards Harris, but we still see, particularly in Pennsylvania, that Trump has a 0.8% lead. And as I look at the map, the Electoral College map, I always ignore when they say the national polling, the media says national polling has Harris at 48%, Trump at whatever percent. I ignore that. It's meaningless. Popular vote does not elect the president. Electoral College does. And aren't we glad that that's how it works? The framers were blessed by God himself with wisdom beyond measure. But when I'm looking at this polling data, it reminds me of something that's extremely important for you to remember during the next and the coming week and up until the election and even after the election. And that's this. Close polls does not equal a close electoral college outcome. Those two things are not synonymous. What do I mean by that? Well, when you look at the polling data right now, you think it's neck and neck. They're as close can be. It's literally 48% to 48% with 4% undecided. That's as close could be. But in all seven of these battleground states, it's so close that it's statistically possible that all seven of those states could go for Trump, or all seven of those states could go for Harris, which would create an electoral college blowout, even though the race is neck and neck. So in the seconds we have left here, I just want to encourage you, as you're watching the returns, as you're following it on KMOX, as you're reading online about how the election returns are coming in, remember that at the end of the day, we could have a blowout at the Electoral College. That doesn't mean the vote's rigged. It doesn't mean the process is rigged. It just means that statistics could reach different results. Brad Young in tonight on At Your Service. We've got the best of Dave Glover next on KMOX.